Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. Carvana makes car buying easy. Isn't that right, hun? Dax? Dax?
Sorry, did you know about this 7-day money-back guarantee?
A week to evaluate seat comfiness, you say?
A week of terrain tests? Yeah, I can test the brake pad resistance at variable speeds.
Make sure all the kids' stuff fits nicely.
Make sure our stuff fits nicely.
Oh, the...
Right. Still need to buy the car. Getting ahead of ourselves here.
Buy your car with Carvana today.
Hey, welcome to FitzDog Radio. It's the birthday special. I had my birthday 2 days ago in Boston. Turned 59 years old, which I never liked the nines. I always like the ages that start with a zero because it's kind of a fresh start. Nine makes you look back at 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 and go, why didn't you get that done? So... I'm doing that now. This is going to be a year where I try to close out on some things. But had a blast. Was at Laugh Boston, which is one of my favorite clubs in the country. And they brought me a big cake on stage after the show. And the whole crowd sang happy birthday, which is awkward. What do you do with your face while they sing that 40-second song? But it was very sweet. They took great care of me. And John Tobin's the best. He took me to the Red Sox opening day, and it was amazing just to see all that sea of faces, and then the two black faces was always good to see them still showing up to a Red Sox game. Just a lot of smiles. You're not used to seeing Boston people not being sarcastic or mean or whatever, but they it was just pure joy. They love their Red Sox, and they had the 75 team that came that won the World Series came out. Yastrzemski and I don't know what am I, a Red Sox guy, but it was kind of moving. And then they do the thing where the Jets fly overhead, and then they bring a veteran out. It's fucking baseball. This is not a military drill. What does baseball have to do with the military? It's just the military trying to do a fucking recruitment drive. They know they got a lot of young white guys there that might join the military. And I don't know. And not that I don't respect the veterans. I'm actually doing a benefit today for Tunnels to Towers, which is helps firemen and veterans who need housing, and it gives them a free down payment on their homes. And so I'm doing a big golf tournament benefit today for them. So it's not that I don't care about the military. Just get it out of sports. Cut the shit. And it's so patriotic. You gotta stand up, or everybody looks at you, especially in Boston. Oh, they don't fuck around with that. Ran into my buddy Pete Scott and Ted Fine. And Ted's son was on the grounds crew. He's like one of the guys that rakes the dirt between innings. Nice to put your kid through college. Spent $400,000. He's got a rake in his hand. Now, I think it's his side hustle. He's got some other shit going on. Great to see those guys. Ted's the best. And then it was just funny. I'm sitting behind the Green Monster, which if you know Fenway is like the left field has this giant wall. And I'm sitting behind it. And, you know, there's a hibachi guy grilling sausages 8 feet from my head. So I had to eat two of those. And you got guys. We were literally the furthest from home plate in the park. And you got guys yelling about balls and strikes. Have another fucking Sam Adams, dude. And, of course, John Tobin knows everybody in the park. I mean, Fenway Park, I got to tell you something. It's not like any other park in the country. It is fully intact from whatever 1940-something. I have no idea when it was built, but it is an old-time park. There's no electronics. It's all what do you call it? The numbers are all just flat. There's no lights. Learn how to talk. You do three podcasts. Learn how to say words. God. But it's got the, it's not a huge park. It holds about 35,000 people, and it's great. And when they sang Sweet Caroline, it's annoying, but then you also get caught up in it because it was the first park to start doing the Sweet Caroline song. And luckily, not a single wave the entire game. 35 hits. I think the Sox won like 13 to 10. It was an unbelievably fun game, just a home run festival. And anyway, so yes, and I did Laugh Boston, which was hectic because I had a ton of, I must have had like 40 people on my guest list over the course of the weekend. And Laugh Boston is just a fun club. But I went from, you know, on stage. First, I go to the baseball game. That's all day. I get home. I leave the park and I get into the subway, which is called the T. And there's 10,000 people all trying to get into the same subway stop. And they're all screaming, "Let's go Red Sox." Like, you already won. You already won. And people just piled on. I got this drunk who had a Dunkin' Donuts, and he keeps spilling it on the back of my leg because it's fucking, it literally, everybody's dick to ass on the subway. Who brings a hot cup of coffee on a fucking subway at rush hour? So then I rush home. I get to the hotel, I change, I run down to the show, I go on stage 10 minutes later, I get off, I'm out front selling my pins, and then I run up, and I have friends, Mary Fitzgerald came to the Friday show, her whole family, who I love, went out to the pub with them afterwards. I had Mike Gibbons' daughter Olivia, she goes to college in Boston, so she came out with a couple friends. Felt filthy. He's got his 18-year-old daughter in the crowd with her two 18-year-old friends, and up there, I'm up there talking about jerking off and having sex with my wife. I'm like, what the fuck? She's sitting right up front. I'm just looking at her like, I'm sorry. It's my best friend's daughter. And then Tommy McIntyre came out. Joey McIntyre, who was just on the show, his brother, who's a great dude. Hung out with him for a while. And then this kid, Peter Martin, featured for me. Holy shit, keep an eye on this guy. Super funny. Maybe he'll be one of those guys that just becomes a big name in Boston. But I feel like I'm going to try to bring him on the road with me a little bit. I think that if he were to move to New York or L.A., probably better New York, I think he could do something. Super good writer and funny. And then I get back home again, and I got, my wife is away. She's visiting her mom and brother in New York. So I'm alone in the house, which always sounds like a good idea. And then I get here and I hate it. I feel so lonely because the kids are gone and it's just me. And I won't even let myself masturbate because it just feels like a cliche. So I went out with Tom O'Neill and a couple other friends. And we went out to Abbot Kinney and hung out at this place. And then the Dunskys, my neighbors, had me over for dinner. Whatever. I've been getting into the details of my life. But it's a poker night tomorrow night. Got a couple guys coming over for that. Got seven of us. And then I got the NCAA finals. Gibbs and Rabi are coming over. We got a bunch of bets going. That'll be here. So I'm busy. Watched the White Lotus finale last night. Yeah, it was as bad as the rest of the series. I kept waiting for this show to pop, and it just never did. I just, the three women, what happened? Can somebody just jot down the plot points of their story over 8 episodes? I don't know that anything, women talk behind each other's backs. Is that the story? I'm done. Schwarzenegger's son seems like a douchebag. I know he's playing a douchebag, but it sort of seems like he's too good at it. And what was the other story? I don't know. I like the girl with the big teeth. I think that's everybody's takeaway. And everybody likes Sam Rockwell's monologue about fucking a tranny. I'm not supposed to say tranny. Fucking a transvestite. Jesus. I might have to cut that one out. Anyway, tour dates coming up. Huntington Beach at the Mamba on May 4th, Escondido Grand Comedy Club May 9th and 10th, and then we got Dayton, Kentucky, which is really Cincinnati, at the Commonwealth, May 16th and 17th. Tampa Bay, Side Splitters, June 5th through 7th. Got a one-nighter I'm announcing now in Naples, Florida, at Off the Hook on June 8th. Torrance, Austin, Point Pleasant, New Jersey, La Jolla, all coming up. Go to fitzdog.com. Get yourself some tickets. Also, we want to talk about mood. Look, cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But also, we want to support the American farmers that make it. That's why Mood was created in 2002. 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. You can get 20% off your entire purchase today when you say FITZ, F-I-T-Z, in the promo code. It is, you know, it's just, it helps you in many ways in life. Cannabis can be very, it's a very functional. I've used it for 15 years. It can help you sleep. It can help you, you know, all kinds of gummies, this THC blends. It all comes, like, you know, in discreetly wrapped. You'll never know. It's at your door. None of your neighbors are going to know. The Sleepy Time gummies are amazing. And they're herbs and what do I know about this? The immune support, menopause relief. How about some PMS symptoms? Buy some of these for your wife. Mental clarity. I have experienced that for sure. Sexual arousal. Well, I don't know. I haven't tried that one yet, but worth a try. So they're all grown on family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code FITZ, F-I-T-Z. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with, and remember to use promo code FITZ at checkout. Save 20% off on your first order. Okay, my guest today is a dear friend, for God. I'm going to say 30 years I've known her from doing stand-up in New York when I was starting out. And you know her as Sabrina the Teenage Witch. She's also been on Phineas and Ferb forever. She's one of the big guns on Hollywood Squares. Had her own show for a while. She hosted The Biggest Loser. Match Game, she's a regular on. Anyway, on and on and on. She's really, and just a stellar comic. Really, really good craftsperson in stand-up. And I just think she's a very special friend, and I was so happy to have her on the show. So please welcome my chat from last week with Caroline Ray. Caroline Ray, welcome to the fresh and clean Greg Fitzsimmons show, FitzDog Radio.
You know what I like about it? It immediately makes me think of Ritz crackers. Is that wrong?
The background?
Yeah. Ritz, Fritz.
I don't know. Fitz.
I see a sponsorship.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. We'll just be standing there eating Ritz crackers.
Ritz crackers, my sister, when she was little, and my parents used to have a lot of parties. I think your parents did too, probably, right?
It was the 70s.
Yeah. They had a lot of 70s parties with, you know.
Did they have 70s
parties? No, oh, okay. No. But
Canadians.
Actually, would I know? How would I know?
You know the joke, Canadians didn't have orgies, too many thank you notes.
So my sister, they would have crackers and cheese set up. And my sister was like, you know, 3 or 4. And somebody picked up a Ritz cracker and they put some cheese on it and they bit into it and they go, your crackers are soggy. And they looked over and my sister had cheese on a Ritz and she was licking it off. So I guess she was using it, putting it back on the plate.
She's like a cat, just getting the salt off for them.
Yeah. No, I think my parents used to have parties. I'm not exaggerating when I say they went till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Like frequent. They were out at night three nights a week, and two of those nights they were home after 3 o'clock in the morning.
I just remember being mortified when my parents would get to the party where they were dancing in the living room.
Oh.
Yeah.
Were they the only ones dancing?
No, they were. Everyone was dancing, mostly, but just seeing your parents dance.
Yeah.
And they were such, like, the vocabulary. I mean, like, there were certain words that I think if my mother ever used the word, like, screw, I was like, oh,
yeah.
So 70s and vile. It just, yeah. It's like if we were playing password, screw, Bloody Mary, yeah. You know, like, it's just,
yeah. 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 No, my parents were very strict about language. We did not. Well, we grew up Catholic. It was a lot of Catholic stuff, but I feel like you grew up. I don't know if you were religious, but I feel like you grew up sort of upper crust, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. But you know what? When I went to New York in 1989, and everybody's like, "You're like, you're such a WASP," and I would just politely laugh, and I'd be like. I don't know why I'm like a bee, but maybe that's... I had no idea what a WASP was.
Yeah.
I never heard the term.
Oh, really?
I had no idea.
Oh, that's not a Canadian term.
No. I literally had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea. Sometimes you just have to do stand-up to realize what a prissy WASP you are. Because my mother would always say to me, you know, Cara, on stage, you're a saucy little sailor. But the minute you get off, you're just a prissy little WASP. And it's so true. I'll say anything on stage with the microphone.
Yeah, yeah.
But someone will come up to me and go, oh, that joke. And I'll be like, ugh, don't talk to me off camera. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's like a character a little bit.
No, I think it's a freedom.
Yeah. It's the opposite of character.
Yeah. I think on stage, I am literally.
In real life, you're a character.
Yeah. Like, okay, this is my question for you, even though I know you have questions for me. How many days can you go not doing stand-up before you feel depressed?
Three.
And that starts to affect you.
2 to 3. Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, last night I bombed. And
what?
Well, I went to Largo. And I get very intimidated by Largo because...
I know, it's like, it's the alt school. And,
yeah.
And it makes, like, the punchline joke people feel like we're ashamed.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, we're
I was not... trying to talk through my punchlines so they didn't seem like punchlines. I was trying to be conversational about my act. And all I saw was, like, you know, middle-aged women... just cross-armed and humorless. It was like an NPR TED Talk or something. And I'm up there and I am bombing. And I don't know. I listened to the tape this morning because I couldn't sleep last
night. And masturbated to it. I'm sorry. That's what I always say. The male comics did. They'd play their tapes back.
Wait a minute. Is this Caroline on stage right now or Caroline off stage?
No, sorry. It was.
And I listened to it today, and it actually was not bad. But I think because John Mulaney and Maron were both standing off stage, and Maron has a way of judging you that me anyway. It affects me because I started with him, and
right.
he's a judgmental guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it made me very uncomfortable. And, of course, Flanagan, who owns the place, they're all sitting like 8 feet from you behind the curtain. And so anyway, I had this thought that every day I wake up, feeling like I forgot how to do stand-up comedy, and it's only after I get the first laugh that night that I go, oh, yeah, I remember how to do this.
Oh, that's so interesting.
I need that first laugh.
I remember when I first moved to New York, and I was, like, having success at it, but it freaked me out because I was like, this is not a tangible skill. I don't know where it comes from,
yeah.
And will it be here tomorrow?
Uh-huh.
Or will just my skill at being a terrible cater waiter be there, but I won't be able to do comedy? And then it's like such an act of faith that you are like, the longer you trust it, of course it's going to show up.
Yeah.
But it's funny that your humanness just goes, yeah. It's gone. Yeah.
Well, I think that
it
you...
didn't bomb.
Well, no, it wasn't as bad as I thought. But I think with you, when you go on stage, I don't know if you have ADD, but... it feels to me like the way you engage with the crowd ignites you. Mm-hmm. It's like you come alive once you start. And you do this thing where you are able to go to both wells. You go to the crowd work well, and then you go into the material, and it really flows back and forth. And that, to me, that's my favorite kind of comedy.
Well, that's my favorite kind of comedy because it's not going to be repeated the next day.
Right.
So it actually makes you feel like you're doing something new. Even when you're telling a joke that you've told 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And I wish I had ADD because then there would be medication. The longest hours of my life were being tested for ADD. And yeah. The guy goes like this. And he was the head of, like, psychiatry at UCLA. And he goes, nope, Not even a little bit. And I'm like, seriously? Because I've had random strangers heckle this to me. Focus. I'm like, don't you think that? But he explained to me that my brain sort of, it's like it goes to the grocery store. It gets the fruit. It gets the vegetables. It gets this. And then it goes back and goes, oh, I forgot this in the fruits. And I get this.
Yeah.
So it's like this sort of, and I do like the fact that it makes it feel like it's alive.
Yes.
You know, like I never really enjoyed doing a TV set. Like even when I would do a TV set and then I would, like I remember at Comic Relief, I thought I had a great set.
Yeah.
It was like, it was life changing, everything that happened that night. Like right. Milos Forman was in the audience and cast me in a movie. And
no kidding.
No. And then I got booked on Hollywood Squares back then.
Yeah.
And like just all these great things happened. But then when I watched the set, I was like, there's just something that doesn't translate between like that amazing live feeling.
Yeah.
And even the greatest set in the world, you know.
I think it depends on the comic. I do think there's people that thrive, you know, like
Carol
Leifer was just on the show. Like she did 25 Lettermans and I saw a lot of them and they were always amazing. You know, you look at Brian Regan or Jake Johansson. These are TV set guys who actually like it when everybody shuts the fuck up and pays attention and they nail down what they do.
Yeah.
But I'm like you. I always feel like that scene from Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where Sundance is walking up to, he's applying for a job basically to guard the gold wagon that transports the gold. And so he's supposed to be riding shotgun. And then the guy tests him. And so he throws a can in the air and he goes, shoot it when I throw it in the air. Shoot, throws it in the air, two shots, misses. And the guy goes, you don't have the job. And he goes, can I move this time? And he's like, yeah. So he throws the can in the air and Sundance rolls over on the ground and shoots it three times. And I was like, that's how I feel like doing stand up. I got to be moving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got to be moving. So I've got to feel like I have never done this before.
Yes.
And I also feel like my intention probably was always, we were so trained to be like, get a development deal and get another show and do this. And now my intention is so like, I genuinely love doing it. And I want to make the audience feel, I don't know, better than they did before they got there.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Right.
I want to give some relief from anxiety.
But I think that that's the thing that we're addicted to is that stand-up comedy forces you to get into the moment. If you're not in the moment, your rhythm is off. Your connection to the audience is off. Your relationship to your own material is off.
Yeah.
And so I think that we spend so much of our lives, you know, bouncing around, and then when you're on stage, there's no excuse but to get in the moment. And then when you get off stage, you carry that for a little while, that feeling.
And do you have this other weird thing that like your first setback is always the best?
Yes.
Yeah. And then by the time you're doing like a long weekend and by the time you're on your fourth show, you're like, this feels stale again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know usually in clubs, I do Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
Yeah.
Thursday night's almost always my best show.
Yeah. I always used to, what's your favorite night? My favorite night used to be Sunday nights.
Sundays are fun.
Yeah. Because those people really want to be there.
Yep.
And they're unemployed and you just, you know, they have nowhere to go and you feel bad for them.
And they went to church and they need to snap out of it now. The church is behind them and now you can hear about abortion jokes. And,
okay, so growing up Catholic, did you have any guilt about certain things you shouldn't have talked about? Oh, I hit a nerve. Yeah.
So much guilt in my life. It's amazing. Like I literally feel guilt when I have sex, like with my own wife. I feel guilt afterwards.
But I admire you because the way you talk about it on stage is so funny, but like, there's not that many people. So sometimes guilt motivated you, like in the right way, because you have a long marriage with a beautiful family. You post pictures of beautiful family trips. Mm-hmm. How long have you been married?
25 years.
And a lot of that is probably guilt motivated, like you'll be killed if you did anything wrong.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
It worked in your favor.
No, it's true. I do think guilt
it's
can be a
good
great
moral
motivator.
Yes.
I think maybe there's not enough guilt. I think we swung too far away from total freedom.
Yeah.
And there needs to be more accountability.
Well, guilt is right up there. Yeah. With making sure you're a good person. It's still sort of important.
Do you feel guilt?
I'm like a wandering, like, spiritual person. I have studied so much spirituality, except I really don't know anything about Catholicism.
Yeah.
That's the one that always scared me, because I always felt very oppressed whenever I would go into a Catholic church, like I had done something wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, I took communion when I was seven, because I was at camp, not when I was seven. Well, yes, when I was seven, because I went to a Catholic camp one summer.
Yeah.
And then I was a counselor at that camp, and I was in charge of the non-denominational services. On the weekend.
Wait, how old were you?
Well, I was seven when I went to that camp, Camp Jeanne d'Arc.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was Catholic. I literally took communion because I was hungry. I had no idea what it was.
Oh, my God.
I was seven.
Do you have any idea what a sin that is?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
You're supposed to have gone through the whole first communion process.
Then why were all these little kids being given it? Or they just assumed I was, oh, look at this. Look at your contagious guilt.
It's, you know, it's almost like,
it's like going to a WASP wedding and not drinking. Is
yeah,
it that bad?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, right. But no, I think the guilt is good in some ways and it's bad in others. But I think in the long run, I don't think it's a good thing. I feel like it's constrained me a lot. And I think that I should have found another religion to wash it out. You know, like I think some Buddhism would have been good, because that's all about not assigning good or bad to anything, right?
I studied Buddhism for a long time, and we had this very unbelievable teacher come to the house. And, you know, it was like all these monks were coming in the house, and we had to learn how to, like, turn the teapot four times. It was like a Tibetan teacher,
really?
And it was all this formality. And my mother, who was the funniest person in the world, there, you know, in Buddhism, you cannot ever hurt a sentient or sentient being, depending on how you say it. Like, you can't kill a bug.
Right.
Everything has a spirit and a life. So before that, I think my mother was doing secret, like, asbestos testing for the government in the 70s, because she literally set the kitchen on fire so many times. Like, everything looked like weird art, like the cuisinier was melted and the blender was, like, distorted. It was, like, strange art. And one time, and she got so mad, if you ever called her out on it, and she spilled, like, a pot of honey. And we had ants from all over the world. It was, like, Mecca for ants.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable. And I was, like, tiptoeing over these ants. And my mother said, just kill the ants. And I said, I can't. They're sentient beings. And she said, use my shoe. So, and when I had all these monks coming in the house, my mother was so, I go, Mom, they're coming. And she goes, anyway, she came in, and all these monks were coming in, and she was, like, walking out the back door when they were coming in the front door. And the house was, we were selling the house at home. She goes, but we'll never sell the house now.
Why? Because the monks were there?
Like, just like people seeing the monks coming in the house. But I think in terms of religion, I really feel like it's like your GPS. Like, we're all going in the same place. What direction and how do you need them delivered to you to get there? And for whatever reason, guilt is one of the tools that got used for you.
Yeah.
But the fact that you have resentment or feeling.
Well, I mean, it's like the ultimate socializing tool. It's been used by every society to try to keep people in line, you know, guilt.
It's true.
Yeah. And it's.
I hate being made to feel guilty.
Oh, God.
That one was really, yeah.
And you know what the best line I ever heard is, and I use it all the time. I use it with my mother quite a bit.
Do you take cash or credit?
I say, are you trying to make me feel guilty right now? And it just flips it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so how much of it, because I would say of all the spirituality between Buddhism and Kabbalah and Christianity and everything, the biggest one I've ever learned that change is your life, if any of us could do it, is to be non-reactive. So if somebody is trying to make you feel guilty, it's not taking that bait, because that's your trigger immediately, right?
Yes.
You've got the giant guilt wound. And if someone goes, and they, so much so that they can see it and hook into it, because they think they're going to control you with it.
Right.
So you're still being reactive by saying that. The step is like, not like, just not reacting to their.
Yeah. And not compensating, not like trying to cover it with another positive emotion, but just feeling no emotion. Like,
now, as a married person, are you a good apologizer?
Yes.
You are?
Yes.
Apologizer? Is it apologist?
Apologist.
Apologist.
Apologist sounds
Is it just pronounced husband?
Yes, just husband. Good husband. Good husband. No, I think apologizing to my kids is one of the most profound things I've done.
Yeah.
I think it's a really important thing to do. Have you done that at all?
Oh, I always say I'm sorry. My mother taught me that.
Yeah.
Like, always. And then what will really drive me crazy is my daughter will say to me, "You never say you're sorry." And I'm like, I absolutely do, because I'm so conscious of it.
Yeah.
I'm very conscious of always saying thank you and always saying I'm sorry.
Right.
But what really gets me, which was a real problem with my relationship with Ava's dad, was he would say to me, "Say you're sorry." And then I'm like, "Oh, do not give me the script unless it is a SAG contract, okay? If I'm going to get residuals for this apology, I'll say it 100 times. But don't tell me what to do." That it's like,
yeah.
And so then, because you can literally be like, "I'm so sorry." And they like say it, and you're like, I'm not sorry, you know? I can't. I don't know how.
Or you turn around and go, "I'm sorry that this makes you mad."
Right. You take away the apology. Yeah. You're like, and Ava will always be like, "That's not an apology." I'm like, "I'm sorry that you," and then you just completely fuck them over, "reacted that way."
Yeah.
"I'm sorry that it triggered something in you. I'm sorry that you have such a big fucked up issue about this that I didn't know until now.
I'm sorry you can't handle the truth." Yeah, "I'm sorry" is such a great thing to say to your kids, because you're modeling behavior.
Yeah.
And you're also showing them that you're not perfect and that they shouldn't hold you up to perfection, because there's that moment, and having a daughter, you know this, once they hit like 14 and they start to see that you're not perfect, they have such a violent reaction to that. So my feeling was always take the air out of the balloon early on and apologize. And let them see you angry, you know, like I have a temper and I will get angry, and then I never get angry like screaming at them, but I let them see me get angry.
You're
at
also
things.
In charge of them. So you have to, they have to. I remember when Ava was about 3, you know how when you're like, you really try very hard to be like an adult parent.
Yeah.
And you're like, "I'm the adult and you're the child." But then sometimes when they're little and they would get to, you also become a 3-year-old.
Yes. Yes.
And I remember saying to Ava when she was about 3, I go, "You are not the boss of me. I am the boss of you." And Ava was walking away like, and just turned over her shoulder and she went like this, "Now that's funny, mommy." I was like,
"Oh, what is she, Greta Garbo or something?"
And then she had a cigarette and dove in the pool and said, "No pictures, no photographs whatsoever. Only from my left side." She did always sound like, she went through a phase where she would fire me in her sleep all the time.
What?
She would count. She'd be like, 9, 8, 4, 9, "You're fired. You're fired." And like she'd fall asleep in bed. Yeah, she was always firing people when she talked in her sleep.
She having like a Donald Trump fantasy?
No. And she
is she dramatic now? What is she, about 17 now?
She's 16.
Uh-huh.
I love that child so much.
Yeah.
Like it's still, I mean, she's 6 feet tall, so it's hard to hold her in my arms. But
is she literally 6 feet tall?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She's 6 feet tall. She's super pretty, hilariously funny.
I've seen her pictures. Yeah, she's beautiful.
No, she's like, she's so funny. I mean, both of her parents are comedians, and she's funny in a completely different way. Are your kids funny?
My daughter, well, my son knows what's funny, but my daughter is funny.
Does she want to do stand-up?
No.
Oh, yeah.
She'd be an amazing.
You said no,
player.
Like I just asked for the car after 7 drinks.
Would you? Do you want your kid to fucking go into this world? I mean, if you have no other options,
if there's nothing else you can do, then become. Well, that's what I felt like. This was it for skill.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's play this game. If you weren't this, what would you be?
A novelist.
Oh,
that's what I went to college for.
Have you written a novel?
Yep.
What was it about?
It was a love story. I was in Ireland, and I was I didn't go to college after high school. I went off to Europe for 6 months with a backpack, and I stayed in Ireland for like 2 months, 2 or 3 months, and I stayed in this house with no heat. It had peat, which is bricks of mud.
Yeah,
give off like no heat. I was in the winter in Ireland, living off peat. And I had a notebook, and I would go every night to the Atlantic pub. And there was a bartender named Molly, dark red curly hair, green eyes, and I just fell for her. And every night, she'd pull pints of Guinness for me, and I kissed her It didn't go really much further than that, but I was in love with her. And so I wrote this novel kind of about falling in love. And then I gave it to her after 2 or 3 months. And she read it and she goes, it's brilliant. And I didn't know that in Ireland, brilliant, you could take a dump that's brilliant in Ireland. That's just how they use the word. And anyway, so she kept it. I gave it to her.
And she has the only copy?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. She sold it under a pseudonym. She's Molly is probably owns 500 bars now because of her first novel. I called it Greg. Greg of the love. Greg of the Pete. No, she probably called your character Pete.
Yeah, right.
After your cold heart.
And then I wrote a memoir.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're too little to write a memoir.
I wrote it, about 7 or 8 years ago.
And?
Did well. Simon & Schuster.
Which bartender has that?
I will give you a copy. Don't laugh at me.
She wasn't. I think it was that one you have more than one copy of.
Yeah.
But you're a great writer. You got some fun skills.
Yeah, thank you. Did you write a memoir yet?
I'm literally, after this, I'm going to see a hypnotist because I have trouble finishing things.
Oh.
I do. Like, I like to stay for the trailer, not the whole film. You know what I mean?
But you
I've been engaged, but I don't get married.
Yeah.
I have a very fast creative mind. It has to do like 100 things.
Right.
In order. I know, it's shocking.
But you strike me as somebody that often has an assistant who will help you through something like that.
I do, but that assistant would have to have an assistant in order to really.
Yeah. So you hire somebody who's like you?
Yeah. I have to just walk around and say things. And then it's like Alan Alda in that movie. There's a game show. It's a game show about ducks. Call me about this. Call someone about the duck show. You know?
Okay. Alan Alda.
You know Alan Alda in that movie with when he's always.
No, Michael Keaton.
No, it's Alan Alda. He's got like a little. It's in.
Not MASH.
No. I don't think they were invented by then. Alan Alda in, it's a Ben Stiller movie, and it's set in New York, and Alan Alda owns it, and he's always talking about, idea for a show.
Yeah.
Greg and Caroline are stranded in a bar. They find Molly. Greg marries Molly's granddaughter and feels guilt for the rest of his life. Well, I like that, like it's a phone call. Oh, no. I have like 3 sound effects. Is that anything? You know what I mean? Walkie-talkie. I just made a walkie-talkie sound on the phone. Anyway.
No, there was a movie called Night Shift with Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler.
I never saw it.
And Michael Keaton had a little recorder and he would say, you know what they should do is, feed the tuna the mayonnaise.
I remember Michael Keaton having the most killer set on Letterman.
Oh, yeah?
A bazillion years ago, and we were both flying to L.A. the next day, and we were both in first class, and we were waiting for the bathroom. Like, 2 people. There's like 6 in the whole whatever first class.
Did you already know him?
No, and I said, hey, man, you just did, that was such a killer set on Letterman last night, and he was like this. He's like, yeah, thanks. Like, no eye contact. And then I'm like, oh, now we're awkwardly in the bathroom on a plane, and I'm like, oh, I am, like, that made me feel so, like, what are you going to do in there?
Yeah.
Go to the bathroom? Like, what am I going to say now?
Wow.
Yeah.
Was that the set where he did the Bazooka Joe comic?
No.
He had this bit that I thought it was on, might have been Evening at the Improv, but he goes, I really love Bazooka Joe comics. I think, just great sense of humor. And he goes, in the first frame here, Bazooka Joe's got a clock and, in the second frame, he throws it out the window, and his friend goes, "Hey, what are you doing, Bazooka? What are you doing there, Bazooka Joe?" And Bazooka Joe goes, "Watching time fly." And then the next frame says, "Time, Bazooka Joe? That's a very ethereal concept, isn't it?" And he goes into this whole existential thing that just keeps going and going.
That's hilarious.
I used to love those. I've got to say, improvs.
You had a little channeling of Norm Macdonald as Michael Keaton.
I've been watching a lot of Norm lately.
My favorite Norm joke is a homeless guy with his dog. The dog's got to be thinking, this is the longest walk of my life. Buddy, I can do this on my own. I was kind of counting on you for shelter and food.
It's endless.
Oh, every I time love I, Norm.
Every time I think I've seen all the Norm clips, I'm on TikTok and I see like two new ones a day from either like his own talk show or when he was paneling with, you know, Conan O'Brien or Letterman. It just goes on and on.
My favorite
would
be. And
it's all gold.
My favorite would be, you wouldn't have seen him in like a year and then you're like, how you doing? Yeah, that's great. Do you want to drive me to Orange County? I'm like, no, I don't want to drive. I have a dentist appointment. Right. I'm like, no, Norm, I'm not driving you to Orange County. Cut to.
Driving to Orange County.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he never had a license his whole life.
Probably a very good idea.
Yeah.
Probably.
What an interesting guy, because so low functioning in so many ways, and yet maybe the smartest person I've ever met. He was...
I smooched him in the 90s.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, we had a little romance.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What was the scenario?
Thank you. Well, of course, we were both on heavy medication. No, what do you mean? What's the scenario?
I mean, were you in a bar? Did you go back to his place?
No, we used to hang out.
Yeah?
Yeah. I guess, yeah.
You were at his apartment one night?
No, he was at my apartment. Uh-huh. No, it was like, you know, I don't know why I'm telling you this, and now I have to somehow give you a ledger of all the times it existed. Well, I don't know. Dating in the apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I never had sex with him.
No.
No.
Ever had sex with any other comedians?
Oh, look at the time. There's so many things I have to do. I have to go to a...
You know what I thought before this show? I wanted to do an exchange with you after the show.
Of
where
who?
We each tell each other what comedians we've slept with.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't have to be on the air.
All right, good. Okay.
It almost would be funny if I whispered it in your ear and then you whispered one in my ear.
Okay.
You want to do that?
I could tell you a really
funny
clue.
I'm going to blow your mind with one.
I'm going to blow your mind.
All right.
All I'm going to say is part of their body leans to the right, which is very ironic. Oh, we both did it. That's really funny. You did? That one? No way!
Yes!
No way!
Regularly.
No way!
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, you tell me yours. No! Are you serious?
Yeah. But are we not mic? Okay, don't you even. Did I laugh hysterically at yours?
Oh,
no, yours is like,
No.
Shwa.
But there's a reason why I'm laughing.
There is.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Well,
I just did a really big movie.
Well, congratulate. What are we at? What are we on, the Tonight Show now or something?
No, I'm just telling you because...
Should we show a trailer? What's your big movie? You want to set this clip up for us, Caroline?
I'm going to act out all the parts. And then he says, and this will be a him, and then she said, and then that was the person. I've got all the different parts down. You know what? I was just sharing, but thanks for the shoot down. I was going to tell you something that made me feel about 1,000 years old.
Yeah.
But it's such a great script, and it's somebody that I Alex Moffat is the star.
Oh, no way.
And he's literally, he's like, if Jim Carrey and Sean Connery had a baby, that's
okay.
How smooth and crispy and perfect his comedy
wow.
is.
Wow.
And in it, I played Julia Stiles' mother.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I can see
that.
But
I do
that.
Get to say this line. I was 16 years old when I had you, but it was very important to me that
good.
I say that. I even asked the writer, I was like, could it be 12 or is that creepy? Could I have been 12? Could it just, how about I adopted her when I was 8 at a Girl Scout camp and then she came home?
oh my God. I just saw a clip of, what's the woman's name from Modern Family, the Latino woman?
Sofia Vergara.
Yeah, so she's on The View and they're talking about her daughter and they're like, oh, my daughter's like 18. I'm like, wow, you must have been, how old were you when you had her? And she's like 13. And they were like, oh my God, you were 13. She goes, raped. I was raped. And then she just kept talking. She just moved right on from it. And all the view, and then one of the view ladies just asked her another question immediately, and it just kind of slipped by. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Anyway, tell me about the movie more.
Jesus, good segue. That is the most, you're the only talk show host that's ever done that. It's like, anyway, hi, it's Greg Fitzsimmons. I just saw the most horrific accident, and then a man jumped out of a window, and I don't think he made it. How are you, and how are the kids? I'm like, traumatized. I'm completely traumatized. That's what it is. A little bit of Catholic trauma coming your way.
I was grocery shopping. I was getting the produce, and then I had to go get the eggs. You know, the mind doesn't. But I'm
see.
But I'm very interested in the movie.
No, that's it. That's all.
What's it called?
It's called Unbearable Christmas. But in it,
oh, it's going to be a Christmas movie.
I play an alcoholic, and I don't drink. Oh. And she's a very tough, mean mother. And it was just very interesting playing someone who I do not identify with.
Was your mother an alcoholic?
No. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is it like going to come out at Christmas?
My father might have been. It's going to come out this Christmas.
Wow.
Hmm.
Is it a Hallmark movie or is it in the theaters?
No, it's an independent movie.
Wow.
No, it's nothing. It's not a Hallmark movie. Like all sorts of unexpected things happen.
I love the Hallmark movies.
I love the Hallmark movies. Oh, this is anyone watching a Hallmark movie. You go in and go, oh, what are you watching a Hallmark movie? Who's that? What? And then you're like, all right, well, now I have to see what happens. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't leave the room when they're on.
And then you cry.
And then you cry.
There was one I watched with my mother when I was in Florida. There's a lot of watching Hallmark in Florida. And so it's about this kid, and he needs a kidney, and they don't have a lot of money, and there's no donor.
I know that one, A Christmas Kidney. I love
it. The dance number is the best. And so
that, 5, 6, 7, 8 kidney, da, 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 kidney. Da, 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 kidney. Okay.
And so they're waiting for this kidney, and it's not coming. And the kids.
It's like Elijah, the way you're saying it. The kidney's not going to come. We have to move the plate. Right. Okay.
And so the mother was an alcoholic and had given the kid up, and then suddenly was back in his life again. And then it's like
Hallmark or Lifetime.
It was Hallmark, and okay. It was like Christmas. It was Christmas morning, and they get a call that there's a kidney, but they're in Iowa, and the kidney's in Nebraska. But there's the biggest snowstorm that Iowa's ever had, and so the entire town goes down to the airport with shovels. Like 200 people shovel the runway, and then they put the kid on the plane, and the plane takes off, and then it gets to the hospital, and gets the operation, and then he wakes up in the morning with a new kidney, and the sun is coming through the window, and there's balloons in the background, and the family's there holding his hand, and then my mother goes, where are they gonna get balloons during a snowstorm?
Oh my God. Oh my God. That is so
And I got tears
funny.
All the time. I'm like crying.
That is so fun. Okay. This talk about how your brain's triggered. So my father desperately wanted to be an actor, but he was
really?
A doctor. Yeah. And his mother said, no, you're gonna be he went to school with Christopher Plummer and William Shatner.
No.
Yes. And my dad was always in plays, and my grandmother
in Ontario?
Montreal. At McGill. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I would put him in everything. So I had a pilot that I had, and Kim Whitley was in the, she's my best friend
of course.
In real life, and she's in the pilot. And in the pilot, I'm at Weight Watchers explaining, I thought this was the greatest idea. I'm explaining why I ate that way that day and that week. And then it's all flashbacks, right? So it's sort of like my audience is the Weight Watchers meeting. So I tell my dad, okay, I'm going to put you in the scene. Right. So the dialogue is this. And then he sent me a bunch of balloons. And Kim Whitley says, balloons? What the hell does that mean? So action. And then he sent me a bunch of balloons. And then my father says, balloons? What the hell does that mean? And I'm like, Dad. And the director goes, cut. Who talked? And I go, no one. No one, I'm sorry. It was a misunderstanding. I go, Dad, you can't talk. You know that. You're an extra. And he goes, what? I can't say that line. I go, no, first of all, it's Kim Whitley's line. It's not up for grabs. Whoever says it first gets to keep it. So then, and the director's like, what's happening? I go, nothing. It's fine. And I'm looking at my father like, so take two. And then he sent me a bunch of balloons. And my father goes, balloons. Cut. I go, Dad, what are you doing? And he goes, I just said one word. I go, well, you can't say any words. He goes, not even one word? She can say the rest of the line. I go, no. Okay. Cut two. Take three. I go, and then he sent me a bunch of balloons. I look at my father. He's mouthing the words. I go, you are such a child. Then the next is whatever take. I go, and then he sent me a bunch of balloons, and Kim Whitley goes, balloons, what the hell does that mean? And then the director goes, cut, someone moved, the extras moved, what happened? It's not the same shot. And I go, I look, my father that was sitting here is now sitting over there. I go, Dad, what? And he goes, the woman beside me had terrible body odor, honey, and she was hitting on me, so I'm over here now. I go, ow!
So he wasn't he's not Christopher Plummer.
No, he is not Christopher Plummer. Oh, my God.
Oh,
no.
My God. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh,
he was funny.
So funny. All right, listen. Okay. I'm going to ask you Fitzdog Fastballs with Fitz is a segment I do because I know you got to go see this hypnotist.
I got to see a hypnotist.
So I don't want to keep you too long.
About a horse. What is that expression? I got to see a man about a horse. What does that mean?
I don't know. It's for like a 1940s film noir kind of a thing.
Yeah. I know. I think it means you have to go to the bathroom, but I never understood why.
Should we promote Blank Slate?
I don't think it's on anymore. No, let's skip that one.
We did a game show together.
I literally thought Blank Slate. I thought you were making fun of my brain.
That was...
Should we promote your blank slate of a brain?
Was that the weirdest experience ever, doing that game show?
No.
It was like such fast food. It was like we came in, we did 5 a day.
You were excellent at it.
You were too.
No, do you do Wordle?
Yes.
Are you obsessed with it?
I was. I don't do it as much anymore.
If I see that word few, I want to say you condescend when they go few because you do it in five. I'm like,
how dare
you?
Yeah.
How dare you?
What does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Quick brains.
Oh.
Wow.
Who is your best Asian friend?
Who was or who is?
Could be in the past, could be now.
Well, I started with Margaret Cho.
Oh, interesting.
And she just won a gazillion dollars on Jeopardy. And she has an incredible album. Who knew? She's got a beautiful singing voice.
Whoa. No,
really beautiful singing voice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
I know. Very impressed with her. Yeah.
Okay. So that's your best Asian friend.
Who is yours?
I don't really have one.
Okay.
That's why I ask people because I'm kind of like... I think it's interesting that Asians make up so much of the country, but we're not really friends with them. Who's the worst opener that you ever had? Like you show up to a city and they got somebody that's going to open.
You know how many times I started and whoever the opener was would be like, and the punchline would be like, big pussy. Yeah. Anyway, misogynist, give it up for Carolyn Rhea. And I'm like, thanks, buddy. Really set the table. So any of those guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
you?
Oh, I can't get into mine.
Okay.
But this is about you. This is fastballs with
Fitz. Oh, fastballs. Okay.
When's the last time you apologized?
I'm sure within the last 24 hours.
I know. I need specifically. When did you apologize? Or the most significant one you've done recently?
Well, I said I was sorry that I was late today because I took Waze.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Cop out.
I live such an exemplary moral life. I don't know anyone that I could say I was sorry to. Really. Anyway, go
it's
on.
It's not like we didn't just.
Next question, lesser being. Go on.
We just talked about what a noble act it is to apologize.
I know.
You can't even think of one.
I just literally apologized to you. I wrote, I'm so sorry.
All right.
Yeah.
What's the closest you ever came to being attacked on stage?
Oh, it was at, it was like 1990 at,
Long Island or Jersey, I'm guessing.
No, Catch a Rising Star, Upper East Side.
That was your club. That was your home room.
That was my home room. And I said, you know, I was like aggressively, you know, bantering. Like, you know, when you start, when you walk to the stage in New York and people are like, you're fat and you're not funny. You're like, I'm not even at the mic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not fat. Give me some time.
Yeah, and you're not even from this country.
Yeah, exactly. So... And I said to this, I go, and I assume this is your second wife. And that was it. She like came after me behind the bar. I think Alan Havey had to protect me. She's like, you are getting it. And I was like, ah. It was so scary.
That's good. I like that. What is, have you ever not finished a set on stage?
Yes. I was in a college in Staten Island. And it's a guy had a chain that he was swinging and like a knife. And I was like, I'm going to go.
What did it look like?
College of Staten Island somewhere. I don't know what it was.
Wow.
But I remember that Staten Island, although deceptively close to New York, is about a 4-day drive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a boat.
Yeah. A boat and then ending in a bridge and a toll and about a $9. Yeah.
And woods. All of a sudden you're like, wait, this is a borough of New York and I'm going through woods.
Yeah. It was weird.
Yeah. Staten Island is weird. All right, final question.
Uh-huh.
What's the hackiest bit that you've ever done?
God. Well, I don't know that it's hacky. Oh, I know. I think this is the hackiest bit I've ever done. I wish that women had GPS systems in their body, too. It would help men with those directions. You are half an inch from your destination. Turn left. Other left. Recalculating. That's pretty hacky.
It's not bad.
I like that. All right. Caroline Ray is coming to a place near you, especially if you live in Honolulu, April 18th and 19th at the Blue Note.
Have you been there?
No, that sounds like a nice gig.
I know, right?
Yeah. Have you been there before?
No, but I've been... I've never played a, this Hawaii is my last state that I haven't played a club in.
Oh, amazing.
But I did perform there and the other act was Mick Fleetwood.
No.
This like big corporate event.
Really?
Yeah. And Joe Torre.
Really?
It was crazy.
What did he hit balls into the audience?
Kitchen.
Also coming to the Grand Theater in Tracy, California. I'm not sure where that is, but that's April 25th.
You know what? This is how I find out where I am. This and Instagram. I'm like, these all sound familiar. Maybe.
Do you know where Tracy, California is? You have to use your ways.
It's near Donna. I don't know where Tracy is. No, do you?
No, I've never heard of it. I bet it's a casino.
No, it's not a casino.
Yeah.
All right. So it was sort of a slow ending.
Well, we end with your dates. That's the most important thing. And also see the film. It's called
Unbearable Christmas. I have a good question.
Yeah.
How many views is your special up to?
500,000. Yeah.
That's so great.
I know. It's very exciting.
And now you can go all around the world because 500,000 people around the world are doing it.
No, I was in Toronto last weekend and we sold out the shows and I said, how many people have seen the special? 3/4 of the crowd had seen it. It was amazing.
That is so great. What club were you playing?
The Comedy Bar.
I'm going there.
Are you?
Yes. And
it's
I've never
great.
Played. Everyone says it's so good.
Oh, it's so great.
You know
great.
What? You have the soul of a Canadian.
I felt like I connected with them. I really did. Like, they're good people. And then
you're
going to
wish you had the passport of one, too, soon.
Yeah, I know. And I went to Hamilton also, which
I'm doing that, too.
Yeah.
We're probably on I do feel like we're on the same path.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
either about to be or, like, Greg was just here.
Right.
Well, you're the funniest, so.
All right, well, have fun up there. I love you, and thank you so
love
much
you.
For coming
thank you.
On.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.